Good afternoon and welcome to UK Column. I'm delighted to be joined this afternoon by Madeleine Hunt, who's the General Secretary from the Heritage Party. So without any more ado, let's bring you on screen. Madeleine, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me on your programme. This is a real pleasure. So I hope we're going to have an interesting conversation.
We're definitely going to have an interesting conversation. And well, let's share with the audience that the little trail will start. We've dealt with the Heritage Party before, as I'll show a little bit in just a moment. But you sent us an email and that resulted in us speaking on a telephone call. And very quickly, you started to talk about what you saw happening in UK, and your base of experience was that you're Polish and you're seeing things that you remembered from Poland. And this resulted in a fascinating conversation, and we're definitely going to get back on that. But first of all, I've got to ask you, what is the lovely picture of the ship that's behind you?
This is actually wallpaper, but I it's about 3 meters per 2 meters, and it's big frame, so it's created the impression of massive painting. But it's a wallpaper, it's an old map.
Okay, right, that's lovely. And you've just told me that you're down there in Cornwall and the weather is not very good. So you don't have to say exactly where you live, but what part of Cornwall are you in?
South Cornwall. Yesterday was really beautiful and sunny. Today we go back to the autumn, unfortunately. And I also have a dog, which is a German Shepherd with long hair. And trust me, this is a nightmare taking him for a walk here in this weather condition. Drive for hours.
Yes. Who's going to deal with the wet dog? And they always come in and shake themselves the moment they come in through the door. I know this one very well. Well, look, let's just give the audience a bit of an introduction. I'm only going to mention these, and of course you can tell us more, but let's put the Heritage Party up on screen. I just took this little screenshot from your website, and it's says the Heritage Party was formed in 2020 to defend our heritage and restore our nation. And then I'll add that last year I was able to speak to David Curtin, the leader of the party. We had a very interesting chat, and people can see that interview by just searching for UK Column Meets the Heritage Party on the UK Column website. And we have actually mentioned Heritage Party in other places, and so I've just brought this image up on screen. So if people search for David Curtin by name, some of the other things will come up where we were talking. And I also thought it was important that we showed a few of the key figures, not everybody, but I was able to show David Curtin here, David Griffiths, the Scottish Heritage Party co-coordinator, Glenn Beattie, who's the Heritage Party Northern Ireland coordinator, and top right, your good self, Madeleine, as the General Secretary. So before we get into deep issues, would you like to just tell us a bit about the Heritage Party and how things stand at the moment and what you're all trying to achieve?
The most important thing about the Heritage Party is the only party with common sense. And I really mean that. And the party, our party, have members from all sides of the world. Really, they are British, but you know they are with different backgrounds. So when people calling us not very nice names, that we are racist or we are Nazis, whatever, it's completely nonsense, because we have people with all sorts of background in our party. It is a party with common sense, as I mentioned already. We follow the facts, we follow the history. So I think we are the only party who really targeting the local issues. Any other party doesn't target local issues. And the local issues is the main issue what we really should focus on. It have a very basic principles, as manifesto based on the very basic principles. It's follow Christianity, but it's not really a religion-driven party. It's based on the Christian principles, really.
Well, the local principles, I understand that one, because many, many years ago, I did have a go at standing for election as a parliamentary candidate here in Plymouth. It was a fascinating experience, and I learned a lot. canvassing and what people said to you and how they react to you, and also the hard work of walking around a constituency to deliver leaflets and canvassing material is very, very hard work. But at one point I was talking to a man who I've known for a long time, and he had and still has a lot of experience in the local council political area as a councillor. And I mentioned something, you know, that I thought was important. And I always remember what he said. He looked at me and he said, no, Brian, it's the potholes in the road which are important. And then he clarified that by saying that you can talk about the bigger issues all you like, but what really hits home to people is what is affecting them in their local environment, what is affecting them in their village, what affects them when they drive down the road. And that's something I've never forgotten, that local issues when it comes to elections are really important. What sort of issues do people react to? Can you tell us some of the things that get people fired up?
I don't know even how to even start this, because since you was talking to this man, many things change in the local council, local structure, and this is the thing what we talk about a lot today. We're trying to talk to people, because the system, the great reset system, what we know is actually called now devolution, and the council what you remember, which was only focusing on very, very local issue like the potholes and collection of rubbish, those councils doesn't exist anymore. The lowest level of the council at the moment, they're talking about the climate emergency, they're talking about LGBT, they're talking about global issues. So people are not really aware that the big decisions which we see from the parliament, first of all, starting the local issue, because the council have to adopt and approve any kind of proposal which is coming from the top. So when people seeing, of course, the issue what we can hear about locally is what people seeing, what is affecting their lives every day. So at the moment, for example, it's the problem of trees being destroyed everywhere. And this is hundreds and hundreds of trees. The green belt is just disappearing front in our eyes. But everyone seems to blame the central government for doing this. But in fact, This is the responsibility of the council, not like years ago when probably they have the instruction from the top to do something. But at the moment, this is the responsibility of the council. And this is very important for people to realize that we're living in the system, which is practically a communist system. It's nothing different, because the devolution based on the same principles, and it's based practically on the same manifesto. And that the issues, whatever we see, issue of the immigration, for example, we blame central government again. It's a particular person. We're targeting a particular name in the central government. But we probably realized a few months ago that the government was saying no more immigrants because we have too many people at the moment. And at the same time, we saw more and more people being located in our area everywhere around UK. And that's because, again, we're going back to devolution, because the government is deciding one thing and then the council is collaborating with the NGOs, which are collaborating with the United Nations, and the global NGOs have the small NGO locally, different names, but they are still connected. And they are agreeing about locating people in a particular area. So they completely ignore the government when the government is saying we really don't want any more people, because they accepting these people under completely different condition in the different department, you can actually say. So it's no longer immigration, it's under the human aid and similar excuses.
Yeah, Madeline, I'm very glad you have, because you've jumped straight into, in giving that answer, you've jumped straight into this core issue that policies that are affecting people now, often very badly. We can look at central government and we can say, yes, the government has done this. But the implementation of those policies is being done at very local level. And there's only one place to look for the blame there, and that is local councils. And yes, I can say UK Column has also been aware of the fact that the policy has come straight down from the highest levels, UN direct to local authorities in many occasions, might have had the EU as a stepping stone, but UN through to local councils, and then the local councils are enacting the policy without any real consultation with local people and local ratepayers. And this, as you say, is a big change in the way that councils work. They've become part of a political network.
It's become worse and worse every day because they're developing the devolution, which is the levelling up. We hear a lot about levelling up. And as you said, consultation, the most important part of making any changes, in the political system, local political system, should be consulted with people. And of course, they are not. So, for example, at the moment, I give different example. We as a party, we have our councillors. We have 9 councillors on the parish level in UK, across UK, which is really good. One of our councillors, a few months ago, because we was studied the subject of the devolution, which was pushed by Tony Blair. He admit, you know about this very well, Brian, because you've done several programs about the subject. But Tony Blair was obsessed with Marxism, completely obsessed with Trotsky, permanent revolution. So he pushed the devolution forward. Successful in the beginning, but gradually they was pushing this forward. This is a very, very long subject. I can't really go to detail, so I'm trying to just squeeze everything in some particular thing that will be easy to understand. So we mentioned the devolution on the council meeting. Our councillor mentioned the devolution. And she said, so when we're going to introduce this to people, because this is a serious changes in the government system. And the old council went extremely upset with her. Extremely upset. They said, you are not allowed to talk to people about devolution. This is years and years before this is going to happen. So you are not allowed, 2 months ago, you are not allowed to talk to the public about devolution. Month later, they signed the devolution deal to become unitary council. And now we have a consultation online. Nobody's informed about this. And the consultation, of course, is misleading because, as I mentioned before, the devolution is practically the same like the Communist Manifesto. So the way how it's introduced is absolutely lovely, very much like the future world under one world government. Everything is just so pristine and wonderful. So that's how they introducing the devolution to us as well. So people don't really know even if they will be informed of the consultation, they don't really know what they are approached with. And fun enough, we asked councillor a few days ago, because they put the deadline at the end of March in our area. We asked him why nobody knows about the consultation. Secondly, why you haven't explained the devolution to anyone? So the leader answer was, we couldn't really explain this to people because we don't have a councillors who understand devolution. So they need to train councillors in a few months who will understand the devolution. But meanwhile, we have a deadline for a consultation at the end of this month. So that's how they work. This is important because they're getting devolution itself means the transfer of power and funds from the central government to local government. This is the system what was in Poland, this is the system what was in Russia, this is the system what the communist country was run with. The kind of devolution what we're going through at the moment, it's on the level of socialist system. And we know, people who know a little bit about Marxism, they know that socialism is the first level to the communism. So this is the moment when you have kind of revolution, they're creating fake conflict, they're putting people against each other, they create unions, and then they create this picture of people getting together, the slogans, they're repeating the same slogans, together we are stronger. And this is the time when they create this revolutionary movements everywhere. So it is like a transformation when the, you can say, working groups, worker unions, farmer unions, they trying to create, put these people together, take the power from the government to people. Except this is delusional, because in the new system, in the devolved system, in the councils, the elected councillors not going to have anything to say. They, at the moment, is 55 councillors who signed for, they call this community boards. They're going to replace the council boards. And they're not going to be elected. They're going to be just chosen by the chair. And they're supposed to represent a member of particular community. So in the system, the devolution system, the community doesn't mean us. The communities already exist. They already collaborate.
Thank you very much for that excellent explanation. I have 1,000 different questions in my head now. Before we go on to the topic that you've just gone through, you are Polish. I'd like to just set the scene with you, as much as you'll tell us about yourself, because you've come into this country with the experience of a different country, Poland. And now there are certain things you can see happening in this country. You can see it very clearly because of your knowledge and experience in Poland. So for people, I have never been to Poland. People who've never been to Poland, just give us a little bit about, if you will, about your background and your life in Poland and what you did experience there.
I came to UK in the 80s, so I was still very young. And when I was younger, when I was a student, I took part in the London, in the Polish underground, which was called Solidarity. Solidarity was a proper movement which became, in the end, you can say, political party, because we, in Poland, after the war, again, I will have to just make the story short. After the war, we have a devolution system, okay? We have a not communist system, we have a socialist system. So they was gradually going to the direction of communist system. And of course, after the war, the country was completely destroyed. So very much like after lockdown, people, the first time when they felt that the war is over, we are free again, we have to build back better our country. So we have the slogans before as well. And very quickly, people realized that the build back better is not really building back better, but it's actually going to a completely different direction, to the point when I think I'm trying to find things which was extremely similar to what is happening here. So to the point when we have historic buildings which wasn't touched and destroyed by the war, and that was many of historic buildings which could be restored, the decision was to demolish them, not because there was danger, but because it was destroying the culture. They was trying to get rid of any kind of heritage and whatever our ancestors done, because they was building better world. So that's the first thing, which is very much, very much the same, that we can see how they're demolishing historic building, how they trying to destroy the culture, how they trying to destroy any kind of tradition. So that's what was happening in Poland. I grew up in this very big pressure. I was actually very young at this point. So I saw different kind of regime in Poland. When I was very little, I still remember the Gomułka, that was the name of the first, you can say this is something like a prime minister, but in fact, this is an officer, secretary of state. And he was a proper communist. The communists, they couldn't go through with the communists, how they push this forward in different countries, because Poland was very, very religious country, very Christian, deeply religious people. So the kind of ideology, what they was trying to push on the nation, it wasn't really possible to do it very quickly. So then in the 70s, we have a slightly better time, but only from the prism of but we can do better shopping. The shops look better. We have bananas, for example, which was completely impossible to having before. But because of the visual improvement, the depths follow. So this is another thing what was done on purpose, to put the country in the very deep depths. Because then people feeling really guilty and they can visualize that, oh yeah, we have the depths because we want a better life. So we rather go back to some primitive life and just build back the country again. So that's what is happening at the moment. So we're putting our country in big depths because they're pushing the devolution. This is extremely complicated. So I'm trying to somehow make this understandable. Anyway, when I was a teenager, I can see the same kind of educational program what Tony Blair pushed forward, the reform program, when they was trying to kill our identity, the ban of home education. Because we had a socialist, we didn't have a communist, we have a still private sector, so they couldn't really stop people from having home education. But how they stop it? They simply allowed people to have a home education, but more like a hobby, because whatever you learn at home, it wouldn't give anyone a diploma. That wouldn't be accepted in any kind of exams. So the state education was still obligatory. Nobody said that we are not allowed to have a private education, but the state education was obligatory. Another thing, for example, how they was killing the culture. I am an artist, and in the Academy of Art, they practically didn't teach art. They was teaching abstract. They didn't like people painting real things because simply they want to kill the creativity. They also create lots of fake professions, very much like they're doing now, like, you know, genderism, this is a fake profession that shouldn't really exist. And we have the same in Poland. By creating these fake professions, they destroyed the agriculture, Polish farming, for example. Farmers who didn't want to comply to the system what was introducing, very much like here, collectivism, was practically destroyed because they didn't have anyone to help them. They introduced the fake profession for a young generation and allowed the minority to have a social points to go to the university. So at this point, the families which was running farms, for example, or small businesses for generation after generation, they didn't have anyone to take this over because their children decide, oh, you know what, I am not going to do this. I'm going to become a lawyer. I'm going to become an expert in something else. So the people who complained to the system was fine because they went for a collectivism. So that wasn't fine because they lost everything, but you know they didn't have any private possession anymore. But people who opposed to the communist system, they was destroyed in different way, exactly the way how they introducing this now. So practically, the good example, another good example will be if you didn't join the only one political party what was existing in Poland, because that was, again, that was a free choice, you can join or not. But that was very much, if you can compare this to anything, that would be very much like the vaccination. No jab, no job. So that was very much the same ideology. If you don't belong to the party, to the workers' party, you're not going to have a point to go to the university. You're not going to have a point to have a better shopping. You're not going to never have any good position in your profession. Another thing, what is very similar, because now we have this attack on the white people, practically. We had the attack on the middle class in Poland, and they was destroying middle class in Poland by leveling up, bringing the working class up, and the intelligent, the middle class down. But it wasn't a nice balance. That was a proper communist system when the people with some proper education, lawyers, from the generation family of lawyers with the firms, they had no possibility to educate their children at the university. If you came from the family with the middle class background, you have lower social points. So you was automatically on the bottom of the list if you want a higher education. So they swap everything, they turn everything around like they're doing this now here. It's exactly the same system. Even the lockdown, that's a good one because, you know, when we had the lockdown here, when you saw the restriction and everyone could check this, if you check 1980, that was civil war in Poland because people had enough after 40 years. And if you check the restriction on the lockdown page, even on the Wikipedia, that would be exactly the same what we have here with the pandemic. It's a lot to talk. I can very clearly see that, you know, I'm going through the same system. And for me, it's extremely frustrating to see that people don't know. I'm trying to explain this, you know, however it is possible. But the system is progressing. So every day I have more to explain and more to explain. And it's become very difficult at the moment.
Madeline, you've done a really good job in the things you've been explaining so far. So don't be too hard on yourself. And I'll say that this is something also that we all here, UK Column, have to deal with, because there are a lot of people saying we don't talk about that and we don't talk about this and why don't you talk about something else? And we say, because you can't give everybody everything at one go. You have to take them up steps of learning. Maybe you only go two steps in the beginning and then you go three and then you go four. And then people start to be researching themselves and they discover things for yourself. But you can't give them everything in one go. And if, well, from my experiences, if you try to do that, that's when the wall goes up and people tend to push you away a bit. So, but you've done a very good job of explaining. I just wanted to echo a couple of things back as you were doing it, because you mentioned good old Tony Blair. And I have to say, I wasn't aware of his communist leaning. So that was very interesting to me. But I was fully aware of John Prescott, who, of course, in the early days was the Deputy Prime Minister. And John Prescott, who many people in UK saw as the, you know, the hard left Labour Party man, he was actually a Maoist when you looked into his political ideology. And it was John Prescott's office of the Deputy Prime Minister that was promoting, facilitating the work of what I call the political charity Common Purpose, that was doing many of the things that you're describing. So I'm going to say to the audience that when you, Madeline, are talking about these things, this makes absolute sense to me, because I can remember what I was looking back in the day at in the days of Tony Blair. And then the other person that came into my head is that many years ago, I was with Mike Robinson in Bournemouth. I think it was. We'd gone to see some people in Bournemouth. And we were able to speak to a very elderly German lady. And she had lived in Germany during the war. She'd been bombed out of two German cities. So she'd really been through some tough times. But at the end of the war, she married a British soldier and she eventually came back to live in England. And what she said to us that afternoon over a cup of tea is, it's all happening again. Those were her words, it's all happening again. And why can't people see it? And one of the things that she then describes was local officials. She was talking about her time in Nazi Germany, local officials getting more and more powers and more uniforms until they could, more and more of these officials could simply walk into your house. And she sat there and said, it's terrible because I can see it, I've lived it. And there are so many people in this country, she's talking England, who simply can't see it. So that was a particularly interesting one. And I'll just do one more. And that was that when I started to realize that there was this creeping political change occurring in the UK, I got interested in the drive for regions. And this was under the European Union regional policy. But with it also came the drive to elected regional assemblies. And one day when I saw the meetings for these elected regional assemblies, I was fascinated to see that it was the then Bishop of Exeter, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was chairing the meeting. And when I challenged his office as to why a religious leader, the Bishop of Exeter, would chair a highly particular, highly political meeting, they became very evasive. But eventually they said a lady would tell me more. Well, the lady who eventually called me and didn't really tell me much more, but her name was Jo Moore. And this was the lady that when the Twin Towers fell said it was a good day to bury bad news. But what I'm really trying to tell the audience is that it was clear to me at that stage that something was at work changing the whole structure of our political and constitutional system. And you're seeing it as well. And actually, there's one more. Around that time, I was sent information from New Zealand. And one of the documents that was sent to me was entitled The Communist Councils of New Zealand. And I was absolutely fascinated at this because I thought, my goodness, I'd have never put the two things together. But there were very astute people in New Zealand warning that the local councils were being changed in a manner which at least appeared to mimic communism. So you've seen what you've seen. I can echo this back, Madeline, that I also started to see something building itself within this country. You came to UK. Well, can I ask why you came to UK? That's my first question. Then I've got another one. Why did you come to UK?
That's a very good question. Because UK was the country with prosperity. We, at this point when in Poland, we even managed to dismantle the enemy. But for people in my age, you know, I was a very young adult at this point, that was absolutely no future, because rebuilding the country was going to take ages. So when I came to UK, I saw the possibility for myself as an artist. I came because I've been doing exhibition and I have a much more possibility to achieve something as an artist than I would have in Poland, because the Poland was practically just coming up from the ashes, from the 40 years of the communist system. So I am, to be perfectly honest, you know, I feel my generation is completely lost generation. This is the people who suffer a lot, because they just went to the point when the system was completely different and they just woke up in the age of 20 in the point zero with no future. So for me, England was the country which I remember from the way how my grandparents, my parents were staying in Poland, used to be from every kind of heritage what was left. We, you know, then good thing about Poland, probably because that was a very religious country, that wasn't very easy to brainwash Polish nation, the generations then. So they did see through what's going on very quickly. They start to opposing the system. And as I mentioned before, it took people 40 years to finally destroy the communist system. Only temporary, unfortunately, because they was pulled to the EU, which is exactly the same. What the, you know, if I can compare the devolution to anything, that would be a EU. This is the same template. It's the same communist manifesto, Marxist template. And that's exactly what they're doing now. When they, we have a lot of countries joining the parliament in the EU. Lots of different countries, different culture, with different economy, and they apparently have a different government. But in the end of the day, none of the people who represent the country have anything to say, because the people who decide what is going to have to to be happening in any of the country would be EU Parliament. And I remember when Poland joined EU, I wasn't living there at all. But I thought this is a disaster. And I remember when there was gradually destroying any kind of culture, any kind of traditions, and they done it to every single country in EU, stopping the production of particular cheese because it didn't fit the norms of the EU. So what they're doing here, it's exactly the same. We already have a London, which is massively devolved, so it's practically like a little kingdom. Nobody could say anything to the mayor. And they're going to create more, every part of UK is going to be like a little government, you know, little country. And they're leveling up everything to the level of what London is. So that's why, for example, I know I'm jumping from one subject to another, but just trust me, it is connected. For example, you know, we have a problem with LTN in big cities. And even if you follow the ideology and the experts, you think, oh, okay, they just worry about the cars, about the traffics. So why they implement LTN in the little villages when, you know, people have one car per one house and it's 100 houses, so it's not really many cars there, you know, so they are not really damaging anything. So why we need LTN in some small villages, some small towns? It's because they need to level every area to the same standard. That's why they transforming countryside to towns, because we all need to be the same. We all need to live the same life standard. We need to be under control. Everything what we do have to be exactly the same and go through the same regulation.
This is fascinating because you preempt very nicely. You preempted me because I wanted to say to you, you've talked through your observations going from a communist society through to how you see things unfolding here in UK today in 2024. And my question was going to be, how do you see the European Union, which sort of appeared in the middle of this? It was almost a facilitator of transition. But you've already dealt with that because you've said that the European Union is the same. And this is fascinating to me because, again, many years ago, I met a very interesting man, Christopher Story. I went up to London and met him. He was quite a prolific researcher and writer. One of the key books that I came across that he wrote was called The EU Collective, Enemy of Its Member States. And I was so fascinated by the book because in it was talking about how society in the West, UK, Europe, was to be destroyed. And in the front of the book, he had a table and it talked about the first stage being to demoralize society and then to basically start to break society down until you got to the stage which they called normalization. And normalization was the point at which Western society had become communist society. People can still read the book online. So if you search for Christopher Story, The EU Collective Enemy of Its Member States, as a PDF, you can find it. Unfortunately, the book is very expensive now. But I met that man and I spent some time talking to him, and it was fascinating how he described this attack on the very foundations of society, and a big attack on families. It was very clear the objective was to destroy families, to break up the institution of marriage, and ultimately to leave people as individuals that were easily controlled by the state. And I've always believed that that's the model that we see unfolding, which you clearly do.
Yeah, it is exactly what I'm saying, what is happening here. And I think we should point on something which is visible for everyone, because everything what we're talking about today is official. It's not something what we think is happening. It is happening, and they're not even hiding the changes. And I mentioned Tony Blair before, because he said that the first thing what he started doing was the reform. And the devolution, what I am talking about, is very easily accessible. If anyone go on the local government association page, they have a full pages explaining the devolution. And then if people go on the Communist Manifesto, they will see the resemblance straight away. So it's not even a secret. Another thing which I think which is very important to make sure that everyone understand what we're going through, it's starting pointing on the system, because as we start talking our chat today about the central government, people are not aware that the government is responsible for decision making only in 3 or 4 sectors of our economy. Everything else is in the hands of the local governments. And this is very, very important. For example, I am corresponding with the Leveling Up Department, Leveling Up and Communities Department, because I have a lot of questions for them. And because, you know, what council is saying is one thing, what they are saying is another thing, so I want a clarity. So I sent some letters about what the council did. I could just answer this question. And several times I received the same reply as the government doesn't have any influence on the council decisions, on the decision on the daily basis, what they're doing day by day. And it, really, the central government power, it's called reserve powers. And this is like defense, security, and something more. And I always saying something more, and I don't remember, but it's probably about 3 or 4 sectors when the government have a responsibility in decision-making. Even so, if you think about defense, when supposed to be the reserve power, we are still members of the NATO, so we can't really say that the government can easily make some free decision, because it have pre-agreements with NATO anyway, so it have to go with whatever is happening. So it's so many things which is obvious. It's not even like trying to find, looking for a similarity. It's just coming from every angle. Everything is happening. It's a communist. It's the same what they've done so many times over and over and again. The approach, as I mentioned before, about the unions, they create this union. Simple thing. If somebody's attacking you, as a person, the normal reaction of human being is self-defense. So when they decide to attack humanity with the system, they was very much prepared for a self-defense. So they expect people to not be very happy with something what they're going to introduce, because they was taking everything away from us by introducing the lockdown and the fake pandemic, and then giving us little bit back. So they expect the self-defense. It was very, very, very well prepared. And most of the movements, which are fantastic, so many fantastic people are in move, trying to stand against the agenda in many different areas of our economy. But they are not aware that the enemy was prepared for that. So soon when it's opposition, there is a leaders who will be running the opposition. So we need to be very, very much aware, because that's what's happened in Poland for 40 years. And that's why the opposition couldn't go through, because for 40 years it was manipulated, and they was joining some freedom fighting groups, which was, of course, going to the same point zero, or, you know, destroying the country even more, because that was, you know, giving the reasons for the government with one party, people power, giving them the reason to introduce new restrictions. So it's the same is happening here, really is.
Madeline, I just wanted to just throw in, it's amusing, it's a serious comment, but it's got its amusing side, that you've come into this country from Poland, and probably because you were active in Poland, and watching what was happening politically. But you've come here and you've straight away, you've seen something's wrong and you're saying, I've seen this before. For UK Column, we've talked to quite a few people that have come into this country from Europe. So they've moved to make a home for themselves in UK. And we've been saying to them, you think you've arrived in the country of freedom and justice, but actually that's not true. You've arrived in a country which is utterly corrupt. You've arrived in a country where law and order isn't what you think it is. And their response to us is to be saying, oh no, you know, this is the UK. We are safe here. We feel safe. And we found that we've had to be quite, you know, to get into quite a discussion with people that have come here from, say, Eastern Europe, because the moment they get on this little island, they think they've arrived in a safe paradise, the safety of UK. And we're saying to them, no, 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 we've got the same problems here. So have you encountered fellow countrymen from Poland or other people who've come here from Eastern Europe who can see what you see? Or are the other newcomers, are they people who can't see it?
It's interesting, but because probably the older generation understand more what's going on, because obviously the very young generation, which was already brought up in European Union, they've been under the same brainwashing program like any other country in EU. So they don't really know the history. They was driven to the strange area, like the genderism and, you know, the completely nonsense things what they're facing. But I think it's very much like here. Some people just get it and some people don't. I can't really say if it is a specific kind of society which understand the system, a specific kind of society would don't. It really is probably down to the individual character. When some people are more curious, some people just want to find out, they see things they are not right, and then other people will be just ignoring this and just go on with their lives.
That makes complete sense. Now, you are here today as a representative of the Heritage Party, and we've been talking some pretty deep politics and political analysis, which I know that quite a few of the UK Column viewers will understand why we're going into these areas, because we've talked about some of these subjects ourselves. But for a lot of people, this is very new. You mix, you're not going to breach any confidentialities, but I can imagine that people inside the Heritage Party would have maybe in the early days had some difficulty understanding what you're talking about. So have you been able to spread the word amongst your Heritage colleagues to the extent that probably if they've paid attention to you, they now understand more about the beast that they're fighting?
Absolutely. And it's not only me, David. The reason why I joined Heritage Party is because I follow David's speeches when he was in the London Assembly. And I realized that he knows exactly what's going on, and because he was standing against the agenda. And I know he was talking about the cultural Marxism and the march through the institution, which you also, you know, highlight in your programs before. So I know that David is aware how the system works. So people who joined Heritage Party, they done the same. They was watching previous David videos. So they have a slight idea about the Marxism, how the Marxism is just trying to get in our houses. But yes, we have a webinars in our party, so we talk about this a lot. And our councillors are absolutely prepared. Whenever they're going for any kind of council meeting, they're trying to push the agenda back. They are successful on several occasions. They managed to push some area of the climate emergency in some part of UK. They managed to save trees because every single decision what the council is making, this is again something that I have to go actually highlight. Every single decision what the council made is not only supposed to be justified by consultation, but also by evidence. They need to have evidence to make decision. And on the simple facts that we question them for the evidence, our councillors managed to stop some damage which was introduced in the council meetings. So yeah, we our councillors and our members are very much aware, because we're making lots of webinars, we're making lots of meetings. We have lots of talk about this.
Well, this is very encouraging, because of course we're seeing that where people are challenging the councils just on policy issues. You've mentioned the low traffic networks, LTNs, and of course we've got people going in. Rachel's one of the ladies, Sandy Adams, but there are others going in and challenging the council on a particular policy issue, and doing it in a very measured, reasonable way, and that's having a good effect. So for your councillors to be challenging those areas, but with the additional expertise and knowledge of what they're really fighting, that is a very powerful combination. And I would say we need more people like that, because unless you know the enemy, you're not really going to be very successful in fighting them. And the other bit that comes into my mind, of course, is that a lot of the battle we're up against is to do with language. That I first really noticed it when the EU got going, that you could read a paper on whatever topic it was. It might be an economic paper, or it might be to do with regeneration in an urban area. But I found I could read it, and then I could be saying to myself, what exactly did that paper say? And I'd read it again, and then maybe I understood a bit more. But the other thing I would understand when I read it the second time was that it was using language in a way that I wasn't familiar with. Sometimes it was words. One of the key European Union words that I started to pick up on was competencies, which you never ever heard in English. You could say somebody was competent, that was used in the English language, but you never heard it put into competencies. And so cohort was another one. And when I began to research this rather weird use of language, I came across another man who was actually, he was an intelligence officer in the military many years ago. And he specialized in some of the communist doctrinal papers. And he translated it into what he called a dystopian language. So it was a sort of hidden language. You read it, you thought you understood what was being said, but actually you had to really understand the system to know that there was a different meaning. And I see this constantly when I'm looking at documentation, well, certainly coming from the European Union, but now you see it in documentation that's coming from a local authority. So the ordinary person reads it, they think they understand what's coming, but in fact they don't, because they don't understand the written language. Does my comment there make sense to you, or is this something that's just an oddity for me?
No, it's absolutely 100% right, 100% right. Because the first thing when our councillors become councillors, they struggle with the agenda, what they had to prepare for a meeting. They have to go through 24 pages. And they was asking me, oh, no, this is too much. What can I do with this? So they had to learn how to read it. You're absolutely right. This is the language what you need to learn how to read. Because in fact, from the hundreds of sentences, probably 10 which are important. So you just We have this automatically in Poland, people who are fighting with the system. We just, you know, we can see newspaper, we don't see the rubbish, we just see the important thing. But this is something what we need to learn, really. So our counselors now learning, they know what to focus when they have the pages, what they need to prepare for a council meeting. Yeah. It's a one point which is very important, like we're going to destroy the tree, for example, yeah? And then it's so much explanation around this, so many people involved, so many reasons why we need to destroy this tree, how good this will be for everyone when we just destroy the tree. So it's so much brainwashing in the text. It's not about the tree anymore. It's about how wonderful work we are doing. And you need to help us because we're going to make our life better. But in the end, you know, of this document, the tree is going to be cut down, healthy tree. So the way to do it is to focus on the main issue and just ignore everything around and always go back, because what they're doing for a meetings, for example, they're doing this big story about one issue. So they're going to debate the story. They're going to talk about the story. So even if you have a point and you want to stand against something, they will turn this to another line. They will be discussing another line, what is on the agenda. Even this is the same issue. So whenever you are in the position when you are debating with these people, you just let them talk and go back to the topic, go back to the main topic all the time. Just say, yes, thank you, go back to the same topic. And this is the way how to read this as well in the newspaper. You know, the devolution document, I mentioned that they don't have a council who understand the devolution. The document is, again, official because one of the council leaders, the local government association leaders, he actually said that just to read the basic document, it's going to take about 14 hours. So nobody's going to spend 14 hours to read this. And also, they wouldn't understand this properly anyway, because it's exactly what you just said. You can just look on this paper and you will see nothing, really.
All on purpose. We've got a change in the language. We've got a manipulation of language and grammar and text in order to get a message across. And for people such as your counsellors or prospective counsellors, they've got to learn how to fight back against the use of that sort of twisted language. So, yeah, this is really, really important. And the other thing that I've seen happen within councils is a clear change in how the structure of the council works. So if we go back in history many years ago, elected councillors at local council level were simply elected as an individual. Mrs. Green or Mr. Brown, they were just elected as an individual. And it was only later that the party system was introduced into local authorities. So that was the first control mechanism, because people were grouped up into Conservative or Labour or Lib Dem, whatever it was. And they then worked to control the councillors through party politics. But the other thing which has taken place in the councils is the fact that you've now got a cabinet. So you take a group of the senior councillors and you take the senior council officers, and they have meetings together and they decide the policy that all the rest of the councillors are going to follow. And that, to me, is verging on communist control, particularly when you know that they have pre-meetings to decide how things will be presented in the meeting. And that, from my relative limited communist political understanding, is how the communist system worked, that the matters were always agreed before the meeting, and then the meeting was simply a pantomime for the public or the lesser political people, as if the meeting had made a decision.
Yeah, we have to remember that on the top of the councils, the people who are making decisions are the chief executives and officers who we never elected. This is people who are appointed, and they Again, people just see the central government MPs earning particular money, like 80,000 per year or something. These people who are on the top of the council, they earn something between 100,000 to 160,000. And this is shocking, really. And when you introduce this document, which is officially published on the council website, if you're introducing this official document to average person, average resident, they just can't believe it. They just really can't believe it. They just, who is this person? This is the person you're paying your taxes to. This is the person who making decision about your life. So not the central government, not you. It's the chief executive, it's the officers. They have the kind of associations, several associations, which they are the leaders. This is the leaders, council yes. leaders.
Yes. And then something else has been happening for many years, and that is that organizations were established in order to educate the council officers and more recently elected members. But one of the, is it called the local, the Government Association of Councils? I can't quite remember the name of it, but I know that
local Government Association.
Yes, Local Government local Association. Government. That's right. Yeah. And yeah. There was a, I don't think it's in existence anymore, but there was another one which was called SOLAS, and that was training the executives, council executives. And this is where my brain said, this is where they are being taught how to use the techniques that we've just described, how to write documents in a particular way, how to hold meetings in a particular way. And part of the trail for me was that some of these organizations were also firmly in bed with the charity Common Purpose, which was another, I called it a Trojan horse. Common Purpose was a Trojan horse by which, when you got people involved with Common Purpose, they broke down the normal structures inside the public sector. I'm trying to recall research I did many, many years ago, but it's all there. So these organizations are still, the bulk of them are still working. They're still absorbing councillors, and they're taking them away for training days, and they're taking chief executives away. And I believe that when those individuals come back, and I'm deliberately going to use the word, they've been reframed in order to think in a different way. And they then start to pervert the conduct of their own local council, local authority.
Yeah, that's exactly what is happening. And everything what you remember, I think it's very much advanced now. They create even more of this kind of special courses, special academies, associations. And the main reason for that is not only to train these people, but also this is a perfect reason to transfer the money from the local government again, because of the pre-agreements about charities and about communities, helping communities. So they not only train people against people, but they also being very nicely paid for that. So
yes.
And also destroying the central government.
Yes.
So it's tick, 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 you know.
Money was always very important. And of course, you live in Cornwall, and Cornwall was given special attention because not only did Cornwall fall in one of the EU regions for the EU, so England was to be broken up into, was it five regions? And then there was Scotland and Northern Ireland, but Cornwall was in the southwest region, which was actually called Area K. I always said that was for control, K for control. Mm-hmm. But then we watched as the European Union worked on Cornwall and helped to drive the independence for Cornwall movement. And what was fascinating about that is that they were using the power and influence of a European Union organization called FUEN, F-U-E-N. And the history of FUEN was that it was actually created by the Nazis in order to fragment countries that they'd invaded, to fragment the structure so that they were easier to control. And I was flabbergasted. I was very surprised when I discovered that this historic organization still existed, and it was working in order to try and get more people in Cornwall to demand their independence. And this wasn't for the benefit of people in Cornwall. It was in order to break down the cohesion of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, that is always for the benefit of the globalists, not for people. Any kind of promises like you're going to have a wonderful life and freedom, you can have a guarantee that it is exactly going to be the opposite. Cornwall is in terrible, terrible position at the moment. We have a councillor in Cornwall, and the letters she's receiving and she's going through, this is really depressing. They're doing the hunt for land, for example, when everyone is asked, like a snitching, but, you know, about the land. Everyone is asked to nominate land when have a potential to build houses. So even it doesn't matter if it is already somebody sells land and somebody have a house there, it doesn't matter. They still want people to nominate this, like, oh, you know, this is a lot of area. This person have a big garden. It looked like a potential place to build houses. So they're rewarding people for doing this as well.
This is very interesting because a similar example I've heard about in Totnes being a transition town, of course, but there it's to do with allotments, land that could become, inverted commas, public allotments. And so you have individuals who have done exactly that. Somebody has a very big garden. Oh, wouldn't it be a good idea if you shared your garden with the public allotment system? So, yeah, amazing. What would you like the UK column audience to do? You're speaking to people.
What I would like everyone to do is to have a look on the Heritage Party manifesto. And please trust me, because when I am talking about the communist system in the devolution, I'm talking through the experience. And having a David who have a very good knowledge about this system, having my experience who have a very good knowledge about the system as well, grew up in the system, we really know who is the enemy. We know the weakness of the enemy. We also see that people are being distracted and leaving them free, whatever they want to do. So I really wish people just join us, people join the Heritage Party and become candidate, become a politician. It's another thing what I was going to say, Brian, if this is possible. People are, another similarity to Poland, people are being pulled away from the politics on purpose, because you have to think with logic all the time in the system. If you are not being involved in politics, then you don't have an influence over politics. You need to be involved in politics to change the politics. If you don't like the politicians at the moment, replace them with yourself. Just become a politician, become a candidate, replace the council. If we can have proper people administrating our home area, that's the end of the agenda.
Use their expression, acting locally. But when people do things to change and affect politics in a local area, some people think that's, you know, that doesn't do anything. Actually, it does a huge amount, because the regime we're up against wants total control everywhere. And so when it loses control locally, this is a very big setback for the agenda.
Yeah. Absolutely. We have to go to the roots. You know, we have to start with the roots. Somebody told me from actually a person from one of our members, he said when he is struggle, he's frustrated because he can see what people are doing. This is like they just picking the leaves all the time instead of cutting the tree. So they just picking the little leaves all the time. Yeah. They just have to get from the roots.
Well, Madeline, you thank you for joining me today. I'm sure that you've given the wider audience a huge amount to think about. And I know that what you've talked about is very important. And we will make sure to get some links up under the video for the Heritage Party. And I'm going to say we're going to do our very best to get this one out as soon as possible. It's been fascinating to talk to you, and I'd love to do more because I know there are many areas we could have gone into, but I think we should finish today. But I will say, I hope you'll come back and join me again.
Thank you very much. Really, thank you very much for having me. That was a very enjoyable conversation. I was hoping to at least share a little bit, but it is a huge, huge, huge subject.
Yeah.
It's difficult to just, this is a very big history. So if we try to summarize history in 1 hour, this is practically impossible.
Okay. Well, it's been brilliant. Thank you very much.